You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to Retirement Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Casey, and I'll be joined shortly by co-host Dennis Wissman. Our topic today is, who will take care of you when you're old? And our guest is Joy Laverty. She's a leading consultant in the mature market industry, a trusted advisor in aging, caregiving, and elder care related issues. And she's the author of her second book, Who Will Take Care of Me When I'm Old? Joy's work has been featured on Today, the CBS Early Show, NPR, and in USA Today and the Wall Street Journal. She joins us today where she lives in Chicago. Joy, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
So if it's okay with you, let's start with your story. How did you come to your current profession after a 20-year career in advertising?
Well, you know, it worked simultaneously. I took everything I knew about marketing and advertising and public relations and then dug deep into a problem that I saw early on as a high schooler. I went to visit a nursing home on Thanksgiving and I saw seven people sitting in the dark. And my 14-year-old brain said, this is not right. So I knew that it was just a matter of getting people to start talking to each other. And back in the 80s, I wrote my first book, The Complete Elder Care Planner, and it was pretty much arranged according to logical thinking, which is really what advertising and PR is all about.
So there's a lot of uncertainty today, and I'm curious what you think how people can plan for their future well and thrive with uncertainty.
Well, you know what, Joe? I don't think that uncertainty is new. I think it's always been uncertain. It's just we have evidence of decades and decades of things that's always surprised us. So how I think that people can plan for their future and thrive is to do what I do. And that's to make friends with people who are at least 20 or 30 years older than you, because they've been around, they've seen everything, they've done everything. And what I do is I seek their advice. You know, what it comes down to is people who are older and wiser than us are not alarmists, and they'll calmly just lead us by the hand and tell us, well, here are some things that I've done in the past and you might want to think about it. So hang out with old people is my answer.
That's a great answer. So something that jumped out to me right away in your book is the chapter titled Think Like a Strategist. How can people think strategically about the aging process?
Well, first of all, people don't know what thinking like a strategist is. So what I like to do is just break open that can of worms by saying critical thinking is really the practice of changing your perspective, right? I mean, if you just continue to think the way you always have, it might just keep you in that little box and nothing will really change in your life. So the idea about thinking critically just breaks that wide open. So here's how I do it. So I talk to people who are very different than me, different cultures, different careers, and I ask them questions that scare me because they will have a whole different idea about things that might pertain to aging that is quite scary. So I talk to people who are different. I also talk to people who are young and people who are old. And one of my favorite advisors is my 8-year-old granddaughter. And I ask her this question all the time. I say, what would you do if you were me? So that is what I mean by thinking strategically.
So, Joy, what should people be preparing for now if they want to age in place?
Well, this is a loaded question, Joe, because we see a lot of advertisements now, and it's like, get a grab bar, put a ramp in your house, make sure you have wide hallways for a wheelchair, and on and on and on and on. I mean, it's like, so how does that help us if we have to typically think about aging in place and the idea that we may also be aging solo. So let's say our immediate environment is set, maybe even by one of those stair things that go up and down the stairs, right? You sit in it like an elevator and you go up and down. But eventually, aging in place means we may have to have people come and go in our lives. Well, how are we supposed to do that if we're aging solo? Are we going to just automatically let people in the house? Well, how do we do that? Or what if they don't show up? The other thing is the house might be falling apart. It's aging alongside us. So we're going to be throwing money at the house. And the other thing is solitary confinement. Oh, what if our friends can no longer visit us? I mean, there's so many elephants in the room when it comes to aging in place. And people just automatically say, I want to stay in my house forever. But they don't really know what they're saying. There's so much more to think about. Now, I haven't even told you about the biggest elephant in the room, and that is the fact that there's a caregiver shortage. There's a shortage of home care workers. So what do we do then? I need people to really take a look, and I describe this all in my book, all the things that we need to think about when it pertains to aging in place. There's a whole lot more than you may realize.
Joy, I found that having two parents, and one in-law and my mom. So when it came to caregivers, they went through a lot of caregivers. The match, they couldn't get somebody to match with them, and there was always an issue, and there was always something. So what can we do as children, perhaps, of these people to help them adjust to this? This is it was very difficult, I guess, for them, right?
Yes, it is. So a lot of people make the mistake of saying, listen, we need to get somebody in here to help you, mom. But basically what I do is I turn that around and I would say, hey, mom, I need the help. I can't get here every day. I need this help. And so I would introduce having a caregiver in the house is for me, not them.
So you mentioned that the house ages along with us, which is a great point. And when deciding where to live in retirement, how can people assess livability?
It's great that you're thinking about living in terms of livability, because as I mentioned earlier, our immediate environment can be all set up, right? We've got everything where we know it is, and the stairs and the lighting and all that. Okay, we get that. But it's one thing to love the inside environment. When I think about livability, I ask the question, what happens when you walk outside the front door? How livable is it then? And there's three components to this. The first component is my neighborhood age friendly? And I don't mean age like for old people. I mean age friendly for every generation, every child, every middle-aged person, every old person has access to parks and to employment and to fresh water and grocery stores. So that's part of livability. Another part of livability is dementia friendly. Many of us will not be able to afford these very expensive places where people go to get dementia care and to get memory care. So how friendly is our neighborhood when it comes to dementia friendly? In the United Kingdom, if you think about stores like Target, well, the stores in the United Kingdom actually have slow lanes, which is really, really nice. And so people would go in the slow lane because they may take more time to do things. Well, why don't we have that here in the United States? And when is somebody going to start figuring out neighborhoods from a dementia-friendly point of view? This is what I mean by livability. And the third one is LGBTQ+ friendly. That's got to change as well. This is all part of living in a livable city or town.
And you mentioned in your book, too, the age-friendly communities that are really being developed. I think, if I'm remembering correctly, it's over 300.
Yeah, and I was part of a book club, a three-part series for a book club for a bunch of women who live in Evansville, Indiana. And by the third book club, they were on their way to launching Evansville as an age-friendly community. That means contacting the mayor and the city officials and retailers, big retailers and big corporate. You're both familiar with corporate America and how powerful they can be in a town. And that they're beginning the process of being certified as an age-friendly city. So this is a certification that is well worth the effort. And we don't need to sit back and wait for somebody else to do it. We need to start doing this for ourselves. And so these women are just taking it upon themselves to create that because they want to live in Evansville for the rest of their lives. And why shouldn't they?
Well said. Joy, what should people know and appreciate about having a caregiver?
Rob a bank. Okay. If you're going to be a caregiver, the first number one rule is get a financial planner for yourself. Because the expenses of being a caregiver can be quite emotional. So if we find out that mom or dad is running out of money, most caregivers, because they're so loving and wonderful, start to dip into their own pockets. And they start shelling out money and really jeopardizing their own retirement. So the number one thing that people need to do if they anticipate being a caregiver is to get a financial planner. Find out how much money you have, find out how much money your parents have or the person you're caring for, and then go from there. Do not go into this blindly when it comes to financial planning.
How about the other side of the coin? What should people know and appreciate about being a caregiver?
It's one of the most rewarding, as far as I'm concerned, this is one of the most rewarding jobs there is. And I wrote in my first book, something that maybe it's a responsibility that is difficult at best, and yet the rewards are priceless. And no one comes away from the experience the same as when they started. And as we go to our elders and we listen to them, we may not realize it in the moment, but we will receive riches in return that we can get nowhere else. I honor caregivers every day of my life.
Do you have any recommendations for families of caregivers? I think of 4 or 5 children, all have different views. Maybe they need somebody as an intermediary to kind of figure out how they can care for mom or dad. I was just wondering, that seems to be a pretty common problem that I see.
Sure. So the first thing family members need to do, especially if there's more than one sibling, is to have a family meeting and have it without the parents. You'll find that some people, well, it's rarely the case that everybody's on the same page. So we have to respect that. We also have to respect the fact that everybody who is involved is going to do things differently. And so you have to pick your battles, not get down in the ditches with the details. Let somebody do it the way they want. As long as it's not harmful, why not?
Sure. And I see the recommendation about adding the family doctor into the conversation or anybody who's a nurse or anything like that. I sometimes see people do that and they're not really talking to that group. They're talking among themselves. Does it help to do that? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely helps. I have a situation. I am my brother's caregiver. Don't forget, boys and girls, that we are also going to be, if our siblings are widowed or alone, they most likely land on our doorstep. So just recently, my brother was hospitalized, and I was on the phone with the doctor every day pleading with him to please have a conversation about stairs and eating and you name it. And he was fabulous. The doctor was absolutely fabulous in helping me with my brother, including the fact that we had to move him. Without the doctor's help, my brother would have been continued to this day been in a very unsafe environment.
That's a great suggestion. And then if you don't mind, can I flip the role a little bit? So I'm in my mid-60s. I have children in their 30s. When do I start having the conversation with them? It's like if nobody talk, we don't talk about this, right? And when is a good idea for us to start having this conversation about how do we want to be cared for ourselves?
Sure. So it depends on the relationships. I mean, some families are close, some are not at all. What I like to recommend is to go first. In other words, here's a thing I did with my mom. And this would be something you could do for your children. And it would be a great door opener. So you put together all of your contacts in a nice Word document, okay? Just doctors, friends, where you go get your hair cut, you name it. And you put it together and you find a good time to be in person. That's the best thing, with your child, one at a time or together, and say, you know what, kids, if something ever happens to me, I don't ever want you to worry about who to call. Here's my list. It's so safe. It's so, yeah, thanks, Dad, kind of thing. And we could also say, but you know what? It would be really helpful for me if you gave me the same information. Because if something happened to you, I wouldn't know who to call. So let's take care of each other starting now, like this. And that is one way people can begin these important conversations. How's that sound?
No, absolutely. A simple first step, non-threatening. I like it. And it's a two-way street there. So you can kind of help each other.
So Joy, if it's okay with you, I want to come back to your book for a minute. I was struck in the introduction that you wrote about your longtime friendship with Marty Bain, who I understand also passed away in November. I was wondering if you could share a little bit about his life and what you learned from his life that you'd want others to potentially benefit from.
Well, Marty was diagnosed with Parkinson's in his 50s. He was aging solo, no children, and he knew he did the most responsible thing, and that is he knew that he would eventually have to live in an environment of people taking care of him. So he did indeed do that. So for the past almost, well, 30 years, we've been talking about transitioning, and then the last 20 years talking about what it's like to live in assisted living. And as a young person, everyone in assisted living around him was 30 years older than he was. What I learned is that no matter what happens to us, we are a fully functioning human being, regardless of our physical and mental capacities. And that if you have a friend who could treat you as such and continue conversations throughout our lives, that is a vital part of being connected and feeling validated and loved. Marty died suddenly, but we had zillions of conversations about death and dying, and that I knew that because we had had this close relationship that he died peacefully. I just know it.
Thanks so much for sharing that. I appreciate it. Joy, what are the biggest things you hear from people who are, let's say, in their 80s or 90s that they wish they did when they were in their 60s?
Many of them are running out of money. They wish they didn't buy so much stuff. They wish that they were more frugal with their finances because they didn't realize the financial effects of living a longer life. That's different for us, right, Joe and Dennis? Because we know that there's a good chance that we're going to live to our 90s and above, but not the people who are in their 80s now. They're caught off guard. So the first thing is they wish that they had better financial advice and legal advice. But here's the interesting thing. The majority of them wish they didn't quit working. They're bored. And I know that the two of you are involved in career transitions. Boy, is your work important.
I think that's a great point. It has to be more than just about money.
Right, because working keeps us connected. Working keeps us vital. Working keeps us learning. Our brain keeps ticking.
And also, you mentioned before about the interaction with people of all different ages. I think it's so important sometimes, at least this is my perspective, to stay involved with that other generation. And even if you're working with them or mentoring them or doing something with them, it does keep the mind certainly sharper and people more engaged.
People know by the time they reach their later years that the world is fraught with problems, and that if we back up, and we take ourselves out of the picture, then how are we helping the next generations? It's just really important for us to be a part of the solution and not think that playing golf 24/7 and sitting poolside is the way to go. People regret not staying involved.
One of the things I see in my work is people sometimes incorrectly think of retirement as an all or nothing proposition. But there are different ways increasingly today to stay involved, to have work as being part of your portfolio in later life. And there's tremendous opportunities to repackage, redirect, and use your skills and expertise in different ways, to, you're saying, to help younger generations in different ways.
Right, right. And it goes back to the first question. Make sure you have friends in your life who are 20, 30, 40 years older than you are, because they'll calm you down when things are crazy like they are now and like they always will be.
You know, I have to ask you, we talked about these people that are older than you and so important, but I couldn't help but note when you were talking about thinking like a strategist about your 8-year-old granddaughter. So what's the best advice you've gotten from your 8-year-old granddaughter?
Oh, she's amazing. She will ask me things that, like, are they really your friend when they do this? Just, I think about how clear she is about friends, because that's her current life right now. The importance, how does this little one stay connected? Knowing that they have to assess no different than we do about what makes a good friend. She's really good at relationships.
Very interesting perspective.
She tells me when we're engaging in these kinds of conversations whether someone's really being a good friend or not.
Let's hope she keeps that. That's great. That's a large part of their lives, who they pick as friends.
We're recording this in early spring, and we were talking before we started to record about the new baseball season that's upon us. And Joy, I was wondering if you could just share with us how you got involved in baseball and how it's part of your life today.
I live in Chicago, and I'm a lifelong Cubs fan. And this happened because my parents and grandparents brought us up loving baseball and loving the Cubs. And in the city of Chicago, we have families who do the same for the other team, the Sox. I'm so grateful I live in a sports city where when you have sports, all the gatherings can be around something that brings people together. And I'll tell you, sports got many of us through the difficult year of COVID, that we latched onto sports, and it became, I'm sure we started other family traditions by gathering people together because of the sports. And baseball, of course, is so all-American, and I've been around it forever. And I always share my love of baseball with people who come to visit, and hopefully they'll share it with their family members.
I miss Harry Carey already.
Oh, yes. And Ernie Banks, just everybody. I was on an elevator with Ernie Banks once. I don't remember my feet touching the ground.
So who's your favorite all-time Cub? Was it Ernie Banks?
Oh, Ron Santo. Ron, of course.
Well, I was just going to guess. That was my guess, Ron Santo. That's first name.
Oh, God. Third base, right? Ron Santo. Yeah.
My guy.
Oh, that's great.
One of my favorite Red Sox players was a former Cub for many years, Bill Buckner.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, there's nothing like baseball, right?
Absolutely. That was the only World Series game I ever had attended in person in my life. The game 6 of the 86 World Series, the Buckner game. But got to see him come back at opening day in Fenway when he got a standing ovation many years later. 2017, I think. 2018. So, Joy, thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom with us today. Is there anything else you'd like to say in closing? Anything that summarizes your book that you'd like to leave people with?
Well, just don't be afraid to ask the difficult questions. And you're not doing this alone. So my final thought is don't let fear get you. Otherwise, you won't have the solid foundation you really need to get ahead of this. And really, everything is written out for you, and it's not that difficult. You just take it one step at a time.
Thanks so much for talking with us, and we wish you and the Cubs all the best until the World Series. We're hoping for the Red Sox baseball series.
All right.
Yeah, we'd like to see that. We'd like to see that World Series. Absolutely. That's great. Thank you, Joy.
You're welcome.
I feel like I should be singing Play Ball or the National Anthem after our discussion about baseball. But the great conversation with Joy. Dennis, what are the things that jumped out to you?
Well, I just stood up, took my hat off, put it over my heart, and I'm ready to go. So play ball. Won't be long, right, Joe?
Absolutely, right around the corner. I'm sorry I took us on that diversion on baseball for those who don't like baseball, but it's that time of year.
It's that time of year, exactly. There. So there were three themes that I picked up today: friendship, boredom, and caregiving. And on friendship, she mentioned there's a lot of uncertainty today. And how can people plan better for their future and thrive with this uncertainty? This is the question you asked her. And she said, it's always about making friends and staying very close with people and getting to know people maybe 20 or 30 years older than you and seeing what kind of, I'll use my word, wisdom that they can provide you to help you as you get older. I think that was real important. She also mentioned the importance of friendship in her 8-year-old granddaughter, and her perspectives on friendship were critical because they can really help sustain you as you age, so, and help you actually think more critically. The second thing was boredom. And that was the last thing we talked about, with the two challenges that people had when they were in their 80s, they were older, and being frugal with money was a concern they had, and being bored. And these are clear challenges. So where people are investing their time, how do they stay engaged? And even the smallest things that people do can be very beneficial to fight against that boredom. And the last point was the caregiving. And we did spend a good deal of time on talking about how to be a caregiver and what to expect from caregiving. And what I found interesting, well, all of her tips were really good, especially when we chatted a little bit about how people our age in their mid-60s can start having those conversations with their younger children who are young adults about how they might want to view caregiving as they get older. And it was the simple things: share contact lists, have a non-threatening conversation. So all of that to me was good. It was very positive suggestions and tips. What about yourself, Joe?
Most of my comments will be about the Cubs bullpen. But on the main subject at hand, I think it was a great conversation. And two things I'll highlight that I think are worth people considering. First is her comments about her chapter, Think Like a Strategist, and the value of critical thinking, stepping back, changing perspective, as she said, and really getting you to think outside the box by following her practice of talking with people who are different. And I know we talked about her recommendation of talking to people 20 years older. The same thing she mentioned it too, is people younger. Really make sure you've got a multi-generational perspective on the things that you're considering. It can be very valuable. And second, your points on boredom. She highlighted what's really in sync with my philosophy, which is a lot of people regret leaving work totally behind. And I think it's worth considering different options of graduate retirement, part-time work retirement, consulting, volunteering, other ways where you can redirect your skills and expertise in service of others. So those are the things that jumped out to me.
And certainly a lot of options out there. You can certainly go down to Wrigley Field and pass around popcorn, right?
Or play third base. Or maybe a better example would probably be left field. I appreciate that. And then thank you for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. Our podcast really takes a different look at retirement and planning, and that's by balancing your planning. No other podcasts cover this side of retirement planning in depth like we do. We bring you interviews with experts to address your questions about retirement planning so that you can retire smarter.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.